Now let's look at the third temptation of the Savior. Again, the devil taketh him up into an exceedingly high mountain, and showeth him all of the kingdoms of the world, and the glory of them, and saith unto him, All these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me. Then saith Jesus unto him, Get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. Here Satan is dealing with mortal desires or motives. Here he appeals to our love of power and wealth, to our desire for position and domain. Let us term this temptation aspiration versus consecration. Consecrated people have given or dedicated all they have or ever will have to the Lord's purposes. They look on their time, their talents, and possessions as stewardships, ones for which they are to give an honest accounting from time to time. Nothing is their own in this sense. Everything is the Lord's, even their body, even their own children. They simply are agents, stewards. The Lord is their principal, and they seek only to serve His purposes. Aspiring individuals are deeply concerned with their own things. They even regard their children as possessions, and often attempt to wrest from them the kind of behavior that will win more popularity and esteem in the eyes of others. This kind of possessive love is destructive. Instead of being agents or stewards, they see themselves as principles and become laws unto themselves. They then interpret everything in life in terms of what it will do for them. And everybody, in a sense, becomes a competitor. The relationships, even close, intimate ones, tend to become competitive rather than cooperative. They use various methods of manipulation to achieve their ends, such as threat, fear, bribery, and pressure. For they are unable to learn the lesson that the only real power and honor that have enduring quality come from obeying the principles of righteousness. The Lord was a perfect model of the consecrated life. He refused Satan's appeal to love of power and wealth and reaffirmed his commitment to follow the will of the Father. In the Sermon on the Mount, he clearly taught that serving two masters, that is, seeking both your own glory and the Lord's glory, is impossible. It is like trying to walk east and west at the same time. Double-mindedness is having two conflicting motives or interests. It inevitably sets us at war within ourselves. The opposite of double-mindedness is self-unity or integrity. When we control, know, and unify ourselves in all of our feelings and desires to the Lord's cause, this is integrity, integratedness, wholeness. This is sincerity, with full purpose of heart, acting no hypocrisy and no deception before God, but with real intent. This is a person who lives what he or she teaches. This is the Son of God who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He didn't just say, this is the truth. He said, I am the truth. He is our exemplar, our model. And he tells us to become like him, to be perfect, even as he and our Father in heaven are perfect. President McKay taught this regarding these three temptations. Nearly every temptation that comes to you and me comes in one of these forms. Classify them, and you will find that under one of these three, nearly every given temptation that makes you and me spotted, ever so little as it may be, comes to us as first, a temptation of the appetite. Second, a yielding to the pride and fashion and vanity of those alienated from the things of God. Or third, a gratifying of the passion or a desire for the riches of the world or power among men. How instructive to understand that these three temptations of the Savior are also the same temptations that come to us. This very understanding yields power to resist, to conquer, and to overcome. For instance, if we find ourselves in situations in our everyday affairs whereby compromising slightly our integrity, we would seem to gain in position or power or influence or esteem, we can then look within and sense that these are truly temptations. Once we see them clearly as temptations, we can marshal our wills to resist them. Let's look at the relationship of the three temptations to each other. I may be oversimplifying, but I've come to believe that until we conquer to a considerable extent the first temptation, we will be unable to conquer the second one. That is, unless we acquire control of our appetites, our flesh, our bodies, we will not be able to control our passions and our emotions and place them in subjection to our spirit. Similarly, unless we conquer the second temptation to a considerable extent, we will be unable to successfully consecrate ourselves. We will instead find ourselves victims of our passions and thereby would naturally yield to the temptation of seeking or aspiring to our own glory in the form of wealth, or dominion, prestige, power, or popularity. Yet in another sense, all of us face all three temptations simultaneously, and we must work, resist, and overcome at all three levels. Conquering the first temptation, at least to a large extent, is possible without conquering the second or the third. Similarly, conquering the first and the second temptations to a considerable extent is possible without consecrating ourselves to the Lord's cause and to His value system. We have known of great athletes who have amazing discipline over their bodies, who have trained and developed their bodies so as to be able to do almost Herculean feats of speed and skill, and yet in other areas of their life they lack discipline. We have also seen people who have, to a considerable extent, acquired a great mental and emotional discipline. They've learned to consecrate and discipline their minds and school their feelings so as to create and accomplish fantastic things. Yet by their own admission, they are not consecrated to the Lord's purposes and the doing of His will, but they have instead consecrated themselves to their own causes and their own glory. Their aspiring self-control focuses upon temporal rather than eternal pursuits and values. Yet I have never known a person who was thoroughly consecrated to the Lord's purposes who had not also control of his or her own passions and appetites. President McKay defines spirituality beautifully. Listen, a consciousness of victory over self. I will never forget one of the missionaries in the Irish mission. When he first came in and for several weeks he followed a slovenly, irresponsible, undisciplined, and selfish pattern. He seemed to lack control of anything about himself. He was a slave not only to his appetites, but also to his tongue and temper. Sleep itself became a form of escape from accepting the responsibilities of missionary work. If his companion slept in, he'd sleep in. He was unable to concentrate in his study, to memorize scriptures, to master the teaching discussions. He resented tracting, using the excuse that he hated to intrude himself into other people's lives. He gorged himself at every chance and grew overweight and sloppy. With all of this, you would naturally expect him to have relationship problems with any companion who refused to take the course of least resistance. Such was the case.